Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Good morning, video games. Welcome to Filthy Casuals, a podcast about video games, hosted by three very kind and extremely knowledgeable boys. Thank you very much for joining us. My name is Tommy Dasilo, and joining me as always...
Good year, video games. It's Ben Vanel here. We're wrapping up the year, part one of our year in review game of the year episodes. Joining us, rounding out the trio...
Gran Turismo 7, Assetto Corsa... Forza Horizon, all examples of Goodyear video games.
Oh yeah.
But they may well have the tires in them.
Okay. Blimp Simulator.
What a wonderful joke to end the year on.
I think you've hit the nail on the head there, Ben. A good year.
Yeah, okay.
Not an outstanding year.
Okay.
But a good year.
A year that would be listed in yellow on Metacritic.
Sure.
Yeah. Hey. I'm not going to avoid it. It's a good year. It was a good year. A
couple of big hitters dragging up the average. And then, yeah, a lot of like very good games. I would say a very good year. It's been
Frank.
A very good year.
A lot came out.
When I was 33, it was a very good year. I went in Elden Ring and slashed with... The R1 button. Mm-hmm. Boy, he really had something, that Sinatra.
It's not easy. It's not easy to do rhymes.
I spent my whole life up until this very moment thinking that anyone could do it. And I finally gave it a crack and now I find out I was wrong.
Yeah,
I did it my way and my way is shit out.
When I was 17, it was a very good year. They gave me three new games as one in the orange box.
Oh.
I fucked a blue lady in space.
Okay.
In Mass Effect.
Oh.
Oh, okay.
I thought you meant Avatar came out. Yeah, I was like,
no,
wow.
That was still 2 years away.
Yeah. You're younger than I thought.
When I was 17.
That's what I was thinking.
And then he was put up a couple of years.
Yeah. Adam's a bit younger than me, and I never feel like that comes up as like that much of a gap. But right. If you had have said... I was 17 when Avatar came out. I would have been like, all right, there it is. Yeah. There's the thing that's making
you are a zoomer.
I think I would have been 18 when Mass Effect actually came out too, but 17, 18 that year. This year I was 32 and 33, and boy, oh boy, did at least 10 games. That's how we're going to do it is five of them-ish in each episode.
It's a wild approach.
I know.
It's really strange.
Here's what we've done as well. You might not have seen this anyway, so I'm going to explain this.
Yeah. Break it down for the people at home.
So we've ranked our favorite games, but not just in any order, or not even like alphabetical.
No.
They're in descending order of how much we liked them.
We didn't discuss this at all.
Because we're going to go for... So the 10th...
All right, we're going to have a break here. You won't notice it in the recording. We'll edit it out. We'll come back and we will have regrouped.
So it means like the number one game, better than the number two game. That's the system it's going to be. So keep that in mind while we're talking about it.
We might even have some games come up that aren't ranked at all.
Holy shit.
Now, you know, we're joking around here, but the reality of the situation is that to arrive at this system was the result of a two-hour conversation on Monday where we went, now how should we do it this year? And we went round and round in circles. We threw out all different possibilities only to arrive back at the format of how we've done it every other year.
We'll do it the same way.
Well, yeah, we came
up
with a bunch...
complete waste of time.
We came up with a bunch of methods to do it. And at the end of the 2 hours, we ranked them from 10 to 1. And then we were like, Oh, shit.
There was a point where we were going to come up with a unified list where we were each going to give our... We were going to involve a third party would do a scoring system. We were talking about getting Tim Clark, friend of the show, into the mix.
The master of trivia.
The master of trivia. Mm-hmm. We were going to send
neutral third party.
Yes.
Yeah.
And get him tally it up and come up with a master list that we would read through live on air, not knowing what order everything was going to be in.
Because our thinking being that there, but we thought we might have way too similar lists.
Yeah.
And we'd be repeating ourselves, or like my eight would be your two, so we wouldn't talk about it at some point.
It's happened a lot in previous episodes where we've had to be like, and it'll happen on these two, where we sort of will hold off on a longer discussion to give the person who's ranked it higher a bit more, you know.
But then I think we were just getting thrown because...
Why did we get thrown?
There's like one game that we're all going to have high.
Right. Sure, yeah.
I think that was the big one, because we also did a listener poll. Thank you to everyone who voted for that. And I've gone through and given them point values.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
In the fashion that we were going to use for this.
Yes.
And it, again, felt almost needless.
Right.
Because literally, I think 45% of people had the same game as number one.
Right.
Right. Right.
But so that will we'll probably do that next week.
Yes.
And I've got the top 10 of listeners to this.
Love it.
Yeah.
Absolutely love it.
Yes.
A heck of a year, though.
Yeah. Yeah. A lot of shit happened. Tommy, you...
A difficult fucking year, honestly, in life.
Yeah, yeah.
Hated it. I had it.
Yeah, I'm on that page. Personal life for me, an absolute shocker this year.
Yeah.
Pretty good for me. Pretty much the same as like the last couple of years.
I think
honestly.
You've said that every year.
Yeah. Like, I had a bad year like 5 years ago, I think.
Yep, yep.
But I mean, actually, yeah, second year in a row that I've been just doing podcast as a job. And that has probably contributed to it being a good year for me.
That is one of the best parts of the year. So thank you to everybody for listening during the year, and especially to people being on Patreon.
Very much appreciated it. Oh, it's kind of life changing, honestly.
To be clear, doing this is an oasis every week at the moment. But
even if someone found an oasis, they'd still be like, "Fuck the desert."
This is an oasis.
I was so thirsty most of the time.
This is an oasis. Everything else was a blur. That's the Tommy Dasilo 2022
story. Oh my god.
Yeah. Oh my god!
Oh, this governor's absolutely done it. But yeah, I mean, this year was I've been hearing this a lot. Bit of a struggle with the transition back into the real world after a couple of years of lockdowns, and found myself multiple times thinking like, God, I wouldn't mind a lockdown right now. But you know what? That being said, in terms of what I would have been doing in that lockdown, I didn't have a Death Stranding director's cut to sink into.
Right.
You know, I didn't have a Persona 5 Royal. There was probably one game that would have kept me really busy, but, you know, the rest of the time.
Yeah.
It's kind of like, do we want to do our general feelings about the year?
Yeah, yeah.
In terms of games, I thought it was a really weird and interesting one. I think we felt the impact of COVID and the lockdowns and everything from 2020 in terms of big budget releases.
Sure.
Because like a bunch of stuff got delayed into 2021 and then 2022 sort of had some of that, but a lot of things that may have come out this year are next year's things or the future.
Even early next year, but yeah, you're right. They have been pushed to next year.
Yeah. So those big-ish games in terms of AAA stuff, not as many tentpole-y kind of games this year, which has been cool in a way, because there have been some indie games that have been fucking rad.
Yeah.
And that gap between them is almost becoming, it has for the last 10 years, is becoming less and less meaningful.
Right.
True, absolutely.
Yeah.
I mean, I feel like it's the delay of stuff, but I also just feel like then the stuff that did come out, a lot of it just creatively not really going for it as hard as I like.
Sure.
Like there was just, I just felt like even the big stuff that did come out, a lot of it was like fine. I feel like, and there was a lot of stuff that came out, like often to the detriment of my enjoyment of stuff that I kind of was actually enjoying.
Right.
But I feel like because of doing this podcast, there's like a lot of stuff that I got like 60 to 70% of the way through and was feeling like maybe a 7 out of 10 about. You know what I mean? Like that's how the year feels to me.
What you've got to do.
A lot of stuff that I was kind of enjoying but didn't make it all the way through, you know?
Pump those 7 out of 10s up to getting 100% of the way through.
Yeah.
And you'll live like me. That's the way to do it.
Platinum every 4 out of 10 you come across.
Yes. It feels like we've hit this weird cycle end, where a lot of the things, and a bunch of them are on my list that came out this year, a lot of criticisms that people had of them were that they felt like more of the same,
yes,
of right? the games that they were sequels to often. Mm-hmm. But it also feels like we've just about hit a resetting point of that, which often happens when a generation changes, where mm-hmm. like you stop getting this franchise and start getting this new one instead of it for the next few years.
Right. Right.
And I think a couple of those games seem like they're coming out next year.
True, right, yeah. Right. I mean, I'm
ready for that, because I kind of agree that some of this stuff has felt like we're in a bit of a routine or whatever. And mm-hmm. also especially having that cross-gen thing be
the
case.
Yeah,
I think that's
time.
A huge element of it.
I mean,
yeah.
My top three, they're all things that kind of, my three or four, they really like scratch the itch in the way that I like with games, where they're doing something unique and they've really got that like that extra little wow factor that's like really impressive and creative and just kind of like gets under my skin. And then everything else on the list is like, yeah, I enjoyed this. Do you right. know what I mean? But it's not sure. it's not doing anything unique. It's not really blowing my socks off and making me go, holy hell, get a load of this.
I think we've come off of as
my
well.
My catchphrase.
Yeah.
In the last 5 years, probably three of those have been some of the best years' worth of video games that
absolutely.
Have ever happened.
Yeah.
Like 2017, 18, and 20 in my head especially, mm-hmm. because of like a few of the games that came out those years were really standout good.
Yes.
And this isn't necessarily that. And just while we're... I want to be super positive about lots of stuff during
no,
these
same.
Couple episodes.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. it is like, weird to be saying this about a year that has given us, not to jump ahead, but a game that feels like very like generation defining
right.
in what it's done.
Sure.
So it's like it's kind of everything else is kind of under the umbrella of that. Maybe to the detriment, yeah. you know. But
and don't worry, Tommy, we'll fucking talk about Kirby. But
I was thinking Bratz fashion, whatever.
the fact that we're... So, yeah, there's so many games that I love and I want to be positive about them. But just while we're getting the quick, oh, maybe this wasn't so good out of the ways, I think the biggest thing I noticed that I didn't like as much as I have in previous years with a bunch of games was writing stuff.
Yeah.
There wasn't really any one game for me that had that, like, great sink into its story thing in the
right,
same
yeah,
way that
yeah.
at least one thing in most other years has
mm-hmm.
for me this year. So I've
2018,
that's
I was God of War.
Red Dead 2
and
as
Red
well.
Red Dead 2, yeah.
And like 2020 Last of Us 2 and
yeah.
like Final Fantasy 7 remake in a weird way.
Yep.
There's like Persona in 2017 or whatever that mm-hmm. was. Like that, the tone of writing, and I think a ton of people have noticed this, has been of this, and maybe it's because of delays and things.
I think it's the other pressures of COVID that have probably caused people to not be able to afford the writers that are of the top quality.
And maybe. Honestly, if maybe. You are a top quality writer, I can sympathize with maybe creativity being difficult in the last two
years. Yeah,
totally.
And also, something I've been thinking about a lot, this is sort of off track, but just in terms of writing, I can see this coming where like people had 2 years, well, depending on where in the world you are, but mm-hmm. let's say broadly speaking, 2 years of like less human interaction. And that inspires your writing. Like,
yeah.
that inspires... So, like, I went to the Meredith Music Festival a couple of weekends ago when people are hearing this big camping music festival in Victoria. That's traditionally been a place where you go and you know, it is very communal. People are talking to strangers.
Right.
You know, you may be stumbling through someone's campsite. It's very friendly. Everyone's on the same page. And me and my friends were talking about this year was the first one post-COVID and lockdowns and everything. And there was none of that.
Mm.
You know, people are in their shells a little bit more.
Yeah. Right.
And it kind of made me, it kind of was seeing it in a really real world context for the first time did make me think, oh yeah, creatively, like people have been shut out from those things that like, that, you know, writing is like two characters interacting. And if you've not experienced that in your life for 2 years, especially if you're a bit younger than we are,
right.
like it is kind of shutting off that part of your brain that, you know, knows to draw, like has a well to draw from.
Mm.
And if you're combining that with some of the delays that we kind of have seen happen and then assume also happened without it being a part of the announcement and meet marketing cycle for a game,
yeah.
it makes sense that some things would feel less current.
Oh,
yeah.
But having said that, out of the way, that's mm-hmm. the one thing that for me has felt like an overall downturn or whatever. But it's nice to say it, have it out of the way.
Yeah, yep. I think
chuck it in the back pocket. Never look at it again.
The vibe is more
accidentally put it through the wash.
No, it gets into everything else in the wash.
Yep. You got to do the whole load again.
You got to pick negative vibes out of it.
My white t-shirts are going to be stained, and because they've got the stain, they're going to say, "Now we got this." Oh. I'll be like, "No, it's spreading."
No, it feels to me like it's like an above average year. And if you average out the year, it's above average, which is great. And that is reflected in my top 10. And I think the general tenor of discussion about games.
Yeah, or that's maybe what we're doing today is a general tenor.
Yes. Yeah. And I hope people rate this a general tenor.
Yeah. But it does. Yeah, a lot of the stuff I liked was, iterations of other series that mm-hmm, I've liked. Mm-hmm. And they've done it really well. They've done a new version of it that's great. They've done it again of a format that I loved in the past.
Yes.
But there's just, there were very few of that, like, we are in this midpoint of, like, very few things that really, like, took it to the next level.
Mm.
But, damn, there are at least 10 good ones.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
You know who, you know what took it to the next level being not existing? Google Stadia.
Oh, yeah.
That's
ultimate,
an interesting.
Yeah.
The ultimate sure. final boss.
Yeah, I guess.
St. Peter.
Yeah.
It's finally in the cloud.
Fucking hell.
It's no way Stadia went up, by the way. It's gone. It is.
No, Google Stadia is up there right jamming out with you,
yeah. Yeah.
That would be a very fun little one of those shit death political cartoons. Yeah. Like the Ouya, what else? Like the
Virtual Boy.
Virtual Boy could be there. The Sega Saturn and the Dreamcast are probably there.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
We've been waiting for you.
Wii U, I guess.
Sure.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
The Wii U's there. Jesus is playing the Wii U.
Oh, yeah.
He's like, why didn't this take off?
He's bumping Nintendo Land. He's like, this is cool. Yeah. Why did they make more stuff like this that uses the screen?
I got to go back down there and have another Sermon on the Mount. Spruik the Wii U.
Please welcome to the Game Awards, Jesus. that auto cue is pretty far away. I can't.
But yeah, the Stadia. I think they had the right idea.
That's the tragedy
thing about it.
Yeah.
Well, because Xbox is doing the same thing to better effect.
That's right.
Like the cloud streaming stuff. Even though I've never been able to really get it to feel good with like a Forza and something that you need. Moment to moment, quick control over anything twitchy like that, but it does work,
it works
well enough that a ton of games are very playable on it.
Especially
in countries with super fast internet.
Well, those like Switch releases that are in over the cloud, you don't hear any complaints about those. So.
It's odd because I have fast internet now for Australia at least.
Yeah,
I've got like gigabit internet that doesn't get up to the full, but like gets into the 800 whatever megabits. So it should work. And so I've never really understood quite why that cloud thing hasn't felt as good as every time I read it. I don't know if it's that I'm being overly sensitive to it, or not overly, correctly sensitive to it.
I guess you're probably like, you're looking out for it, so maybe.
Sure.
Yeah,
but you can just feel it. You can't drive in Forza type of thing.
But that's, I mean, I think with controls, like, I think, you feel it if it's even like a fraction of a millisecond off, like you do notice it. So,
and if you were playing like Yakuza 7 or something like that, or Persona, any of those Persona games going up on Game Pass now, anything turn-based that doesn't rely on that, it would be fine.
Yeah. I think it was Broden from Auntie Donna, one of our mates. They're touring New Zealand and he like posted a screenshot of like the cafe Wi-Fi was like, 500 megabytes per second upload, 400 download. And it's just like, what is going on in Australia with our internet?
It's crazy.
You're talking bits. I get so confused with like, because it seems like ours is, but megabits and megabytes are, I don't know why they use them interchangeably because they're such a different number. But
well, I mean, for a long time, and I think this is still the case when they do them on Switch, like, they literally just don't even put them up here.
Yeah.
It's like, hey, if you're in Japan, you can play Resident Evil 7 on your Switch. If you're in Australia, you can go jump.
Yep.
But so I guess maybe that's part of what, as well, why the world isn't necessarily quite there for a dedicated, because it's great to have with as an additional thing that you get with the Xbox Game Pass Ultimate thing that you're already paying for the games.
Yeah. Yep.
To have it as that extra thing. If it doesn't work fully, you're still like, whatever, this is a bonus.
Right.
But the complaints that you hear from people about Stadia who actually got it and played it weren't about the responsiveness of it.
No.
As much as the fact that you were paying full price for games to only be able to play them on Stadia.
Yes.
that seemed to be the biggest issue that they had.
Yep.
And then also, I guess, marketing, because it really didn't seem, people weren't talking about it.
Yeah, but the concept of like a console that doesn't physically exist in your house, that is just like, you know, it's not hard to imagine that being the world in 10 years, 15
absolutely.
Years.
Like when internet I think 10
catches
at the
up
most.
And is more. Yeah. And so,
maybe not in Australia, but yes.
Yeah, you can totally see articles being written about like, you know, there are so many cases where, like I was thinking on the way here about that U2 album that they put in everyone's iTunes library and people hated it. And yes. It was like such a PR disaster for them. But this concept of like, hey, we just want everyone in the world to be able to access our album right now for free if they want it. That's how music is released now. If you have a Spotify album, that's just like, now people treat that as a God-given right.
Yeah.
But at the time it was like the most, you know, nefarious thing
so
people
invasive.
Could have imagined. Yeah,
yeah.
So it's
and
like,
honestly, even that idea would have worked if it weren't U2. Like, if it had been a band that most people liked.
Yeah. And this might have worked if it wasn't Google. Like,
exactly.
Right,
it's, and so
right.
it's totally, but it's like you look back on that now and it's like, yeah, they were kind of ahead of the curve. Like they had the right idea. It's like,
totally.
No one's buying these things anyway. Like just let everyone have it and they might like a couple of songs and then come to a show. So it's always frustrating when you can just see like the tech isn't quite there, but a company goes, oh, but you don't want to be the person that breaks ground.
No, exactly.
It's like
yeah.
You open the door and then it's easier for people to just stroll on in afterwards.
Exactly right. You blaze the trail, but you burn your little footsies.
Especially in a world where, you know, these new consoles like the PS5, they spend all this money on like marketing it and making it and then like no one can get one.
Right.
So you can see them being inspired with the next thing of being like, hey, you know what would really solve that problem? And people are angry at like the cross-gen stuff. Like people don't feel like they're getting their investment back on buying this new hardware. If everyone just has access to the same version of the game that's on the cloud, that's not having to run on the thing that's in your house.
Yeah.
You don't have to worry about going out and buying it. It's just you pay us a subscription and then you're in the door. Yeah.
It'll be the way one day. It's always odd to think about like, well, what about when your internet is down or what about when they shut it down, which is another big trend from this year that is a continuation of previous trends of like the way they shut down Stadia by just going, in 2 months or whatever it's gone, you don't get your games refunded.
Right.
Like Bungie will specifically be making it easier for you to transfer your Destiny stuff over because they've put the work in, but we're not doing jack shit for you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Your controller won't work.
That's
fuck
right.
off. Like all of that stuff.
My Google controller.
I think you got refunds. I do, because we had someone write in who loved Stadia and was like, I was,
even if someone dies, you still love them. That's okay.
Yeah.
You can love a departed loved one.
But like had bought games just on Stadia, like loved the fact that they didn't have to have a big console in the living room.
Yeah.
And I do think they were saying like, we're getting refunded. Maybe it was like not a subscription, a portion wasn't getting, there was some aspect that wasn't perfect. But yeah, it's like, it's gone in January, I think. So had a like 4 months warning, I think. It was September,
which is
the announcement.
More than some games are even getting now because like the Unreal games all just got delisted.
Yeah. So
Epic's this.
Taken a bunch of shit off, right?
They took Unreal 1 and 2 and Unreal Tournament, all of the Unreal tournaments, but they're putting 3 back out as a free thing.
Oh.
But not the one they never finished because Fortnite took off and it's kind of confusing.
Yeah.
But they all just kind of went and then they said it.
You're right.
That game Babylon's Fall came out this year, the Platinum game that no one liked and was delisted 6 months later, something like that, and taken all down. Fuse's just gotten delisted.
Yeah, that's a shame.
It's often licensing stuff like that. But the amount that it's become clear that this is the way things are going to be.
Yeah.
It is inevitable that every game gets shut off. Single player games are so often server dependent now that that'll start happening soon.
Yeah, and the cloud thing, like, I mean, what it does limit you with, an innovation that we've had in the last few years is like handheld gaming really taking off to the standard of console. I mean, I love blasting through a game on the Switch on the plane, but if you're talking about something that's only cloud based or you have to be online for. It's like, even just trying to play Marvel Snap on a flight recently, it's like, this has to be online. That's so annoying that I can't sit here and play my little card game on the flight.
Yeah.
You know, that's like when you need it the most.
Yes.
And when it's gone, it's gone. Like, it's not even like it's going to be another golden age for piracy because so much of the data is stored server side that like, similar to how you can get like these weird kind of mods where you can set up your own server for like World of Warcraft and shit like mm-hmm. that. A lot of it's so hacked in and people have had to reverse engineer it that people aren't bothering to do that for something like Fuser,
yeah,
where you can't even, if you were so inclined, go and pirate all of that music,
right?
Because it's specifically this token that through the Epic Game, it's some, yeah, there's some weird DRM'd fucking reason.
To the.
So, yeah, all of that stuff has progressed more this year in both positive and negative ways, because a positive part of that has been, fuck, Game Pass has been sick this year.
Yeah, yes, exactly. Really, that's the trade-off, right? It's the same with Spotify. It is the convenience of having access to something like that for a relatively affordable subscription price.
Yep.
And a lot of... I hazard a guess and say that a lot of the games that I will talk about over these 2 weeks are Game Pass games.
Yeah,
my fucking internet poisoned brain. When you said I hazard a guess,
yeah,
it read it to me like I can has cheeseburger style.
So we need to take that offline. Yeah. Get that out of the cloud. Shut that server down.
D-list memes, that'd be fantastic.
From our brains, yeah.
Boy, that felt strange. Like hazard being the past tense of has in a millennial talk.
Fuck yeah.
Duel.
But yeah, the Game Pass, big boon for this podcast and for our videos, like the amount of stuff that we churn through, because it's just, yeah, we've got access to it. Like, we're not going to pay $60 to do, you know, one-hour video of this thing and then never touch it again. But it's like, yeah, it's there. Cool. We get to, and getting it day one.
Well,
it's
and
sick.
That's the way I would have been doing it with a lot of games back, you know, 10 years ago or whatever. Of instead of thinking of it that way, of like, oh, this might be fun to do a video for, but thinking, oh, this might be fun to play for an hour.
Yeah. Sure.
This, I haven't heard of this thing because I'm not as plugged in as now.
Yep.
So it is such a cool thing.
It's the video store.
Microsoft specifically must be doing something right with, because Stadia shut down, because PlayStation launched their one that does not seem to be as well received. I haven't done the upgrade because I'm not that interested in the PS1 and 2 games through that service.
Yeah, right. I upgraded to play Ape Escape and then went, what am I doing? Why did I do this?
I upgraded to play Stray because that was released as part of like PlayStation Extra or whatever.
That was like the one, right?
That's the one, yeah.
And then I went straight back down to normal PS Plus.
And they butchered the messaging of it, like the way that they... I mean, I think that's the biggest issue with it, because it is... There's good, you know, there is good stuff on there, and, you know, the monthly games are usually like all right, and you get the whole... You know, they're like legacy back catalog kind of thing of just like even the last couple of generations worth of stuff.
Mm.
But they just like changing the pricing around on people and like the messaging around that was just so confusing with all the different names of it and everything. It's like...
I just think it's flat out too expensive.
Yeah.
For what it is. Like the fact take away the marketing, which was bad for sure. It's like, it's just not worth it to me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So...
And you don't get the PS3 games in Australia, which is a bit of a bummer.
Yeah.
Because they are all... You know, Stadia style streaming. Rather than this. By the way, I don't know if we explicitly said, we're talking about stuff that happened this year. We'll do the top 10 later.
Wait,
we wanted to have a chat about the year.
I thought the Stadia shut down in 1998.
the other thing that I saw this morning when I was doing a bit of, you know, brushing up on the year past. The other crazy thing that happened is that the creator of Sonic the Hedgehog went to jail.
Yeah.
Or was arrested twice. I don't know if he's in jail. Yeah.
He's also the creator of Bell and Wonderland.
Sorry.
And Nights into Dreams.
Yeah. And that's why he went to jail.
He insider traded on two different games. Were they
two
both?
Square games?
One was Dragon Quest and one...
Oh, the other one was the mobile Final Fantasy VII, I think.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Crazy. I don't know what... I mean, I guess it's in the courts, so nobody knows yet.
Yeah. We shouldn't prejudice the jury, actually. We should not be talking about it here.
Mm-hmm.
But Yuji Naka, innocent.
Yep. 12 angry riffs. you had the Activision trial, speaking of court, which ended up getting a lot of very interesting little tidbits out of.
That's true, We got all the leaks.
Announced that in January, I'm pretty sure, January or February, Microsoft's takeover of Activision Blizzard. And all year it's been really fascinating because there were so many acquisitions and stuff in that like sort of end of last year, early this year window.
Sony buying Bungie?
A Oh, boy.
I think was also the start of this year.
Yeah, I can't. But a ton of that sort of stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
The biggest.
Tencent buying up a whole bunch of people.
Oh, yeah.
A
ton of shit.
Yeah.
I want an OJ Made in America style 10-part extensive doco about this trial, this Activision trial, where it's like.
Honestly.
But it's like OJ style. We go all the way back to just like Nintendo making cards in like the 1800s.
I don't
you
mind
know?
This. Just a peripheral player in the court case.
Yeah, exactly. Actually, not featured at all,
yeah,
really.
Yeah, yeah.
No, you know, for the full context of what a game is.
They did like one acquisition and it was of basically one of their partners already anyway.
Yeah, yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
The fact that that led to the pretty funny level of bitchiness from Sony towards Microsoft in particular.
Again, great for us.
Great
every
for
week
us.
We were coming in.
Console Wars 2.
Mm. Yeah.
CW2.
That's been a bit of fun. I still don't necessarily understand, not even as I'm going to be big enough to admit.
Okay.
I don't understand the entirety of antitrust laws.
Yeah.
That is big of you to admit. I do.
But that stuff has been interesting to watch from the outside.
And yeah, like all of the financial stuff that got released of like how much Game Pass makes, how much Sony makes off certain things.
Yeah.
All of the Call of Duty back and forthing is it seems like it should be dry, but I find it very fascinating. And I think it is because like there are personalities at the forefront of these companies.
The other big acquisition that led to me getting a subscription eventually for the New York Times was that they bought Wordle.
Yes.
Yeah. I was trying to remember. So did Wordle come out last year?
I feel like it may have been end of last year, but it got big. It was big this year too. And all of the hurdles and so like I think
the Wordle hurdles?
The
Wordles?
The knockoffs. The Wordle
light.
Hurdle was that Spotify one. You get 1 second like just a dip of a song and try to guess it.
What was the film one? Like Framed or something?
There was Framed. There was, I think, Gamed or something. There one where you would see a screenshot of a game.
Yep.
Yeah, it must have
Worldle.
Worldle.
Was the country's one. Yeah.
And then it was just like, it's 50 Wordles all at once.
That's right.
Yeah, that's right. I kind of liked that one.
And it was fun having everyone be into this one thing.
Yeah,
a
I
trend.
Went to a wedding out of town in Feb and a bunch of us stayed in an Airbnb and we're all hitting the Wordle every morning.
Imagine day of the wedding, marry is the word.
Oh my God.
Can you imagine how certain you'd be of your love?
Yeah.
But what if it was death or something
or
like
cheat.
That
cheat.
Day? Yeah.
Runner or, being like, oh my God, we got to warn Ben.
we had in lockdown one or 2020, we had checking case numbers in our group chat.
And
that very quickly morphed into Wordle chat. It was good.
So I mean, technically the biggest game of the year.
Yeah.
Congratulations, Wordle.
It's not on my list, I have to be honest.
Mine either.
Yeah.
If it had started like later this year, it may, because when it, like a lot of things, it's like, it dominated group chats for a little bit, was super into it. And then it was like, you know, you just noticed at one point one person in the chat's just like drifted off from it. They're not posting theirs anymore.
Yeah.
I saw on Instagram the other day, I follow Questlove from The Roots and he posted something about, like he's still hitting it every morning, which I was like, man, I respect the hell out of that.
Yeah.
Just like, you must have barely anyone in your life that you're still talking to about
this. Well, and I dropped off because to me it seemed that there were only so many five-letter words that you can have in there that don't piss you off. And like when you were getting to those words, it was like, what the fuck's a Zaxax?
Right.
Yeah.
That,
Zephyr? Come on.
There were one too many of them in a row that just made me kind of lose track of it.
Everyone was like, oh, the New York Times bought it and now they've made it harder. People were like, it's literally not true. Like,
yeah. It's impossible for that to be true.
Yeah.
Oh, there was another New York Times game. They had a couple of good ones on there. One where you get like the 9 letters and you've got to make as many words out of them as you can.
Yeah.
And then another one that was like...
Is that the jumble?
There was the
Garfield?
It's Garfield.
The Garfield game?
Wizard of Id is what I'm thinking of.
You get two panels and you have to try and guess the punchline.
Oh, I don't mind.
John drinks cum. You got it.
every single.
It's lasagna again. There was another one that was like, I don't remember exactly how it worked, but I got really into it where it was like you could only use the letters there or something. I can't remember exactly what it was, but it was very fun and I would be doing that every day.
Oh, yeah.
And then was doing the crossword as well
all the time.
And then there was one really fucking bad crossword that I found out was made by the same guy who edited the game that I liked. And I went off the game because I hated that one crossword he did so much.
Okay.
Fucking shit ass crossword. It was like a themed one and the theme was bad. Worst game of the year.
Okay. I did like, there was something I liked about a game that is like seemed designed for like start of the day. Mm. Get up. Get your coffee, sit there and knock out the Wordle.
Get your brain cranking over.
Yeah, it's like you're not doing, you know, you're not like, you know what, I've gotten up. I'll just knock over this castle in Elden Ring and then I'll get on with my day.
Right,
something
right.
about like a quick little task.
Toilet game like, of the year.
Exactly. Yeah, totally.
Well, actually.
Well, I disagree.
Oh,
right. Well, I didn't get into Marvel Snap. Marvel Snap what? Went off.
No, I'm dragging the whole rig into the toilet. Anytime I'm in there, fire up a bit of GTA 7. It's like I'm driving around a mobile toilet.
Fuck, that'd be sick. That would be sick.
That Grand Theft Auto leak was this year,
yes.
And that was massive to me.
Yeah.
It kind of, I think, maybe dropped off a little bit because Rockstar said, like, this doesn't affect us.
Yeah.
And the release of Grand Theft Auto 6 and everything in, like... We're just going to basically ignore it other than in the courts where I'm sure that... I think it was like a kid from London.
Right, right.
I think we all feel a bit like, you know, leaks generally when they happen that, you know, they're good for us to talk about on the pod.
Yeah.
And, you know, a lot of the time they're just like, oh, yeah, someone from... Like there was a bunch of stuff from the Mario movie where it's like a Happy Meal toy, you know, thing that... A McDonald's, you know, it's like something like that. Those ones are fun. Yeah, it's like a retailer has a poster early and then it's like, so it's like, okay, this is just kind of a bit of human error.
One guy who is often good at leaks said that Last of Us 3 is the next thing Naughty Dog.
That's kind of interesting.
And they're working on potentially an original IP, I think. That came out yesterday.
That's been around for a little bit as well, I think. So
right.
that they're doing that separately. The next thing Druckmann, I guess, is doing.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Exactly.
But we don't know is the thing. And that's why that one is fun, is because it's like, ooh, it's a mystery, even if it's true.
And
but
it's also one... like, oh, a developer's working on a new game? Oh, okay.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Wait, The Last of Us?
Yeah.
One of the most successful video game franchises of the last...
100 years?
Whatever.
Yeah. Good luck to you. It's your funeral. But this one
Boring.
Was like so invasive. The fact that this was
it, had, it was like yeah, the dev mode, like yeah, all the
yeah.
stuff. On the
yeah, it, was, it sucked
said
to say.
Said that he
it
had the source code. I don't know if that actually got out there, but that could like
yeah, because he's trying to auction it off, right?
And could be like a security threat. And I think what ended up happening is this kid didn't quite realize the fucking trigger that he'd pulled. Is what it seemed like from screenshots of what he was posting in forums and whatever.
That's right.
So it ended up being that it was such a massive thing that it was like, oh, okay, maybe. And there wasn't even that much interesting stuff in the bits and pieces that I saw.
It just looked like a GTA game that wasn't finished yet, honestly.
Yeah. Confirmed the two characters thing, kind of, and that sort of thing. But
which was already a rumor, so it wasn't, you know, a bombshell.
The
so,
thing that seemed massive about it to me was that it reminded me so much of the Half-Life 2 leak from 20 years ago, where the exact same thing happened, where all of that game got taken by someone and got out there and whatever.
Yeah.
And that delayed the release of that game massively. It, like, changed parts of that. Like, it had a huge impact on the development of Half-Life 2.
Right.
Which doesn't seem to have happened with Grand Theft Auto.
Yeah, it was pretty funny. It's like, it comes out and this is like... All the like I saw it on Twitter, and it's like all the comments were like, "This looks unfinished." It's like, yeah, it's like 3 years away from coming. Yeah, man, this cunt's in fucking wireframe.
Yeah, exactly.
Of course, it's unfinished.
No, that's gonna be the HUD. It's gonna be like, you know, little like frame rate indicators and shit.
That would rule if they just went, you know what? All right, it's out tomorrow. You can just you know what. If you want it that bad, here you go.
Here's 4.5 hours of an unfinished game.
Are you happy?
Fuck. Yeah. No, I wouldn't be.
I wouldn't be either.
Yeah.
I'd hate it.
Yeah.
What do you think, guys? Should we get into the? Should we get into our top 10s?
I think that was kind of
I think so.
There's a couple other things like EA dropping FIFA, Bayonetta 3 stuff, which I feel like we talked about a bunch and got resolved.
Recently, and the Mick Hucknall? What's his... The Doom guy.
Mick Gordon.
Mick Gordon.
Mick Hucknall.
I want to shoot some demons. Oh, yeah. Is that the guy?
Simply Red?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
He's Simply Red, isn't he?
I think so,
I thought he might be everything but the girl. I always get those two mixed up, but he's Simply Red.
I think E3 didn't happen, and hopefully we get the chance as Australians to talk about the Steam Deck next year.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's still not here.
I keep getting sponsored ads from Amazon AU being like,
really?
Get a Steam Deck.
For fucking such a markup. For
$1,500. Is that much? How much are they?
No.
How much are they in Oz dollars?
They're less than a grand?
The beefiest one.
I believe it is.
Yeah, okay. It's like $8.99 or some shit like that.
It is pumping it up by a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's
expensive.
That's not nice.
And look,
it's
we've
crazy
all
to have
got
like no news
PCs
about
and shit. So like, it's not necessarily something I even would have bought personally.
I don't think I would have but I would have liked to have seen one in the flesh.
They're cool.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's about the stuff for the year. Like you were gonna say, Tommy. Maybe it's time.
It's top 10 time.
And tonight's top 10 is the best video games of the year.
Letterman spending like 3.5 hours on the top 10.
The video
he's
games.
Got in-depth and he's like asking.
Rudy Giuliani's favorite video games of the year.
Okay.
Well, what order do we want to do these in?
God, great question. Yeah. I'll see what my 10th is and if it's...
The way that it is on the title of the podcast is Tommy, Ben, Me.
Oh, true.
How about we go
Adam,
that order?
Me, Tommy.
Reverse. Sure thing. All right.
That's the way we're going to do it. We didn't even know we were talking about it.
Yes.
We'll do it in a loop. We've done it the other year.
Do it in
a
loop. If we want to flag a game and say, let's talk about it later, we can do that.
We've each got a 10.
We've each got 10 games, some overlap.
All right. Well, my number 10 game of 2022, it's got this Marvel Snap.
Oh, my goodness. Can I throw a flag already?
Flag me up, baby.
Because I think we'll be talking about it on next week's episode, if that's okay.
Wow, okay.
But, I mean, that is a week away, so if you
want to... Off to a ripper start here.
You want to give some thoughts, Tommy?
Well, it's such a, like,
I love it. It's really rare for me. I kind of feel like I'm... It's for some reason in my brain, it's like it's rare for a mobile game to be able to like punch through and be, you know, when you talk about these big AAA games that are in the mix or really creative indies, there's just something about a mobile game that just exists in sort of a different sphere for me.
Right.
And also, I'm not the biggest Marvel fan, but this just, I just read a bunch about it online. And I think after last year, we talked a lot about Inscription and loving that and kind of being like, man, card stuff is cool. I think I'd never really gotten hooked on a card game before Inscription, and I'd still been looking. You know, people had recommended ones.
Yes.
I'd tried them. A couple I'd kind of liked, but they hadn't really had that sticking power, and then this just has, like, gotten me all the way back in on that. And it's you know, it's similar to a Wordle. It's like I play maybe like half an hour in bed each night before I go to sleep, a little bit of a wind down, very quick, very easy to get into. It felt I sort of went back and forth with even putting it on the list at all, but at the end of the day, like, I mean, I guess, like I said, because it exists in sort of a different sphere for me, and not to jump ahead and spoil the rest of my list, but like,
you better not.
I just my 9 through 1 are in order these.
I just was thinking as we were talking about it that, like, and again, because it's like it's not in the same sort of sphere as everything else. It's not really front of mind. The play date, you know, probably could have been on my list as an overall thing, but it's not. But just to shout that out here, probably like alongside it is just like, to me, you know, existing in like a sort of in sort of like a separate zone to everything else that I'm going to talk about. But like, great, great, fun, creative time. Love Marvel Snap.
Hell yeah.
Yeah, nice. I never really got into it, but I'm looking forward to hearing more about it later with the playdate since we brought it up as well.
You can't put a console in your top 10 games.
Well, I was I wouldn't list any of the...
And I would also tell you to take it off.
Yeah.
I wouldn't, but Yeah, mine showed up broken, and it has taken months and months of not hearing back for weeks from the support stuff, which has been very frustrating.
Yeah, yeah, that's a real, that puts a bit of a dampener on.
Oh, don't know if I'll ever be able to talk about the play date.
Yeah.
Even if I get one, it just might be too painful.
Yeah, that and hearing that honestly does make me regret not making it my number one. The fact that they've annoyed Adam, it's like, man, they've shot right up the list.
Well, old Benny Vanel, it's my turn to reveal my 10th game on my list.
Mm-hmm.
And it is a game called Rollerdrome.
Okay.
The rollerblading shoot 'em up game. It's Tony Hawk style arenas, knocking off challenges, beautiful fluid movement, fluid shooting, that great like hang in the air, slow down stuff.
Yep.
It's just, and like hitting the, it just is a perfect example of twisting a like sports game into something more creative, more innovative. I played the whole damn thing.
Yep.
Really, really loved it. Visual style was awesome. The creativity of like the world building I thought was really nice as well. That sort of rollerball, you know, like Running Man sort of weird
future death sport.
Yeah,
right?
This, like, I love this too. This is an honorable for me.
Yeah, right.
This is in exactly what I was talking about before. A game that I was really enjoying, but I think it came out at a period where like a few things came out right afterwards. So I never quite finished it. But what I was playing, this probably is one that like, by the time I get back around to it, I'll feel foolish for not having it in the top 10. Oh,
man, there's a few on my honorables that definitely will be that for me.
Yep. There could be a stack of just games I probably would have liked and never got around to, and Rollerdrome is one of those.
Yeah, right. It's great. And like having that sort of wave of that visual style, sort of starting with Sable, and there's been a couple other games like it.
It's odd because it doesn't directly, it's like thin cartoon, but it does, it's not like it's cell shading, but it's more like, it almost looks more like that kind of Japanese style of like old art.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
But yeah, like woodblock engraving or like, like that, yeah, like Yukioe. What's it called? I forget what the style
is. I don't know the term, but it that specific thin cartoony cell shading look that you write Sable and this have looks really weird and nice.
Oh, yeah. And in this, it's like frame rate is great. There was no issues with that, which obviously Sable just kind of drifted out of my brain because of that. But this is my 10th favorite game of the year.
Yeah, it's weird. I think we were talking about this at the time that I don't know why this is, but it kind of did go under the radar a bit. It felt like when I started playing, I was like, this is so cool. This is going to be a thing that people really latch onto.
Yeah.
And there was a bit of chatter about it in our Discord, and you know, we were talking about it when we were playing it. But I mean, even to the point where as I was, you know, putting together my list and Googling like, oh yeah, what games came out this year? I was like, oh yeah. Like it felt like, yeah, it really didn't take on in the way that I thought it might have. I mean, even when it was when it was announced, it looked like it was going to be an online competitive thing,
yes,
which I think was of not much interest to us. And then the fact that it's like, yeah, it's almost like a puzzler. It's like the enemies are always spawning in the same, so you're kind of working out like
it was super hot Tony Hawk, basically, which is a great mix. I think if it had been a competitive online multiplayer game, it would have had staying power and people would still be talking about it. And I would have liked it less, but the rest of the world seems to like that exact model.
That's
of
true.
Game, so,
or, you know, like we were talking about, if it was a Game Pass game, like it probably was the sort of thing that people were maybe a bit like, I don't know what this is. I don't know if I'm going to like it.
It's not, it has an end point. It wasn't hugely long. It was like a Tony Hawk game where it's like, here's the stages, here's the challenges, gets progressively harder, but once you finish it, it's finished.
And I think you've got to give it up for, we said this when I reviewed it, that it so easily could have been a mess. When you hear about all these elements on paper, it's like you can slow down time and you're doing tricks to refill your ammo and you've also got to kill people. It's like, it sounds like it's doing too much.
Right.
And the fact that you can't stack it, I think they probably would have been a point where they were like, let's put that in as an added challenge, and then found like, this just makes it too hard. Like you are having a lot to focus on, but it never feels overwhelming. Like they really got the balance just right. And I think it's not hard to imagine a version of this that's like a 6 out of 10, because it's like, it's just all a bit, it's all a bit much.
But it somehow gets you into the Tony Hawk Pro Skater mode of like just full flow, and it feels very satisfying. But
it sounds a bit like how Jet Set Radio used to, like, you would graffiti tagging whilst skating around.
Right.
So, but should play it. Now, Game of the Year is a discussion you can have. People might have different opinions about it.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
That's fair enough.
People may and do on this very episode.
You can't. I will not stand for hearing people have a debate about which VPN to use.
Yeah, yeah. It's objective.
It is an objective, measurable. NordVPN is the VPN of the year.
That's right.
And you may think, well, do you have a horse in this race? Yes, they're sponsoring the episode, but true, also they're good.
That's true, yeah. No, this is an ad, to be clear. It's not a review. But yes, NordVPN, they've been supporting us all year. They are a fantastic VPN service. Use it before they sponsored us. We'll use it for the rest of my life.
Wow. Because
I can't say what I'll do for the rest of my life.
I can, because I'm killing myself tomorrow.
Wow.
It is so cheap. I think one of the past ad reads, we figured out it was like $2.80 US a month if you use our deal, which is a fantastic deal. It's a huge discount. You get a free... like 4 months, you get a bonus month or some shit. It's like, I don't know.
It's a deal so good we don't even know the details of it because they honestly do even keep improving what it is.
Yeah, our brains can't comprehend how good of a deal it is.
Yes.
You can go to nordvpn.com/filthy. Is that right?
That is correct.
And that's how you have a look at that deal. It really is a good thing. Internet privacy is super important and you're being tracked by fucking everyone now.
Yeah.
You're like the goddamn, who's someone who would have been tracked by the feds?
Jason Bourne? Rovara.
No, someone who didn't do anything wrong.
Oh, okay.
So Jason Bourne's a good one. Yeah.
Edward
He's
Snowden.
Running everywhere.
Edward Snowden.
He was a VPN.
Yeah.
Well, let's use fictional.
James Bond.
James Bond would never use NordVPN because he's a fascist as far as
I could imagine Q pitching him a VPN in that room surrounded by gadgets.
Oh, not, you meant Q from James Bond, not QAnon.
No.
I thought they were going to have a collab.
Now, that could be, that's good.
Mr. Bond, this may look like a simple pizza place, but if you could...
Don't put your money into QAnon conspiracies. Put it into a NordVPN.
Put it into a NordVPN subscription. Yeah. So if Q were describing it to James Bond, he'd say, well, yes, it hides your identity on the internet. It can let you seem like you're from another country, Mr. Bond.
But it also allows
look at this silly war.
To, there's virus protection, threat protection, malware shit. There's password. Like a little secure password bank thingy in it.
Super easy to use on a bunch of devices. Go have a look. Yes. NordVPN.com/filthy for the big deal. Now, back to your regular podcast. I don't think people understand that the ad's over unless I say that, you see.
Now, Adam, stop me if this is too personal of a question.
Okay.
But what is your number 10 game of 2022?
Well...
he's look, pulling out a sign.
We've been
I
friends
can't
for
quite see what it says on it.
We've been friends for a long time, so I will answer that. But you have kind of crossed the line.
I've stepped over the line, okay.
Yeah, that Julie is noted. Very big of you.
My 10th favorite game of the year was Vampire Survivors.
Okay. Oh, all baby! Right. Now this is on my list. I better check where it is.
If it's 9, we'll talk about it now.
It's not 9, but it's
this week.
Oh yeah,
we can wait a minute then because
it
also
won't be long, yeah.
I should say that the sort of bottom 6 of my list, similar to you, Tommy. There's a solid top 3, and then the rest are almost interchangeable. I like them all, but it's hard to you know. Mm-hmm. But I think this is maybe 10. We can talk about Vampire Survivors in a little bit, but just as a preview.
Mm-hmm.
My 10th favorite game of the year.
Oh, wow. What like an insight.
Okay.
I'm sorry. I feel so bad for being the one who's done this twice, by the way.
Well, I have a feeling you're about to do it a third time, bitch.
Okay.
My number 9 game of 2022, Ghostwire Tokyo.
Can I tell you, my number 9 game of 2022.
You sons of bitches.
Ghostwire Tokyo.
It's my number 9 game.
Oh, yes. Now, if we had had Tim Clark in here, we would have been getting a banger result out of this.
Or we would have had some fucked up point system where it would have been our fourth best game of the year or something.
Totally. God, that felt good.
Well, that makes it easy. Ghostwire Tokyo, huh?
Yeah, it's a really good, it's a 9. It's a 9 out of 10, 9th out of 10 game of the year. But what an exciting, fun experience. So visually creative.
Yeah.
Loved it.
Felt so, like, unique.
Yes.
That was a really cool thing about it, where it was pretty polished and everything. I think the only negative thing I could say about it is that it had too much of the same sort of... tasks that you were like asked to do. But then the game itself never tells you go out and do all of them.
That is
it just has a lot of the same sort of things all over the map. So wherever you are, you can kind of go and do one of these different things. And each of those little tasks that it gives you were so... like, it was so much fun to explore that weird, moody version of Tokyo that it's got.
Yep.
This, like, great-looking, kind of creepy, but also super fun and interesting world that you were moving around in this, like, odd and really nice feeling first-person platformer
the shootery coins, thing. The coins, like, shooting out. There's so many great little visual touches in it.
The design of that phone that you know, jack into where you like open, it's like all of that stuff was so creative and like the visual like fidelity and stuff, it was great. Like it looked really, really nice. The lighting, all of that shit.
Yeah. It's the art direction, like its take on that like sort of Japanese folklore ghost thing was so well pulled off and so just enjoyable to look at. The first time you see that, like I forget what they're called, but like the Death March ghosts walking through Tokyo. The first time you hear those drums in the distance and then you turn around and you see, I guess they're in the like intro cutscene, but when you see them actually walking around in the street, it was like real fucking crazy. Seeing them passing by you in that big, big, you know, famous intersection. What is that called?
Shibuya?
Shibuya. Yeah. You know, anyway, but it looked fucking
Shibuya.
Just going to Tokyo and going to pass that crossing and just like, blasting that one out to like literally like the hundreds of people around you. Shibuya, I barely know it.
It was unlike, it did nothing, no other game did that sense of atmosphere and presence maybe quite as well as Ghostwire Tokyo did.
Oh, a VR version of this would rule so hard.
Yes. Wiggling your hands around.
Yeah, because it's a funny one because it like, I remember.
So
it,
funny.
It's a crack up. The script had me frequently laughing. When it came out, it was getting sort of like sevens across the board.
Yeah,
and I was like, oh, yeah. And then you guys were really into it. And then I got COVID, went in, and I just played this for the entire week. I finished this off like while I was sick and isolating. And it really, I mean, its critical reception is like so indicative of me, to me, of like the way that like the people that review games just play too many games. You know what I mean? It getting sevens. It's like everyone I know that played it loved it.
Yes.
Like it's, you know what I mean? It's like often the case, it's like, a 7 out of 10 will be a lot of people's like favorite game of the year.
Yeah.
But if you're, you know, if you're having to play things like over a 2-day period, like constantly, it's like maybe it wasn't quite doing enough to like pop for journalists in that way, but it's so solid.
The problem with it, with that type of review too, is maybe if you're reviewing games like they're fucking microwaves and ranking it based on here's the, because it does have like frame rate problems even on the PS5.
Right.
It does have like repetitive content or whatever. Like if you're making a bullet point list of the technical aspect, but there's a factor to it that is just really engaging that isn't necessarily represented super well by picking it apart and killing the frog that way.
Yes.
I loved it in spite of, I don't know if you guys have this with anything that you interact with when you're very sick, it's always a little bit tainted in your head because even though when I think about it, I remember, like, I got really sick from COVID.
Well, I hate but vomiting for that reason. I've always, like, it's always been while I've been sick and it's never been fun for me.
I always vomit after a great night, so I associate it with really positive thoughts.
I feel really poorly about COVID because, like, when I had COVID, I also felt really sick.
That's
because
weird.
Of the side
That's,
effects of COVID. But, yeah.
That's a you thing, I think.
In spite of, like, my memory of, like, just being so, like, sick that week, I'm still, like, when I think about all the little visual touches and design touches to this, I'm like, yeah, I kind of am. It like it did make the, it gave me something to do in a week where I was like very bored and missing shows at the comedy festival and hanging out with people. I was like, yeah, it was like the perfect thing to just sink into and just get lost in this virtual city.
I think with that review stuff as well, it's like if a reviewer doesn't care about like how cool the representation of Tokyo is or Japanese mythology, then that is a really subjective thing, whether it's to your taste or not.
And
I think it's to all of our taste. And again, yeah, like you said, Tommy, most of our friends who played it really loved it and connected with it.
I think Lev 100% at it. Yeah. I know Ruby loved it. I really want to, I want to go back in and finish off all the side stuff because I was just, as I tend to do with open worldy kind of games, do the odd sort of side thing if it's kind of like on the way to where I'm going, but I kind of do just tend to power through. But I got the impression that the side stuff was some of the most interesting.
The side missions are great.
Yeah.
There's a lot of like the small little marks on your map where I forget what they specifically are, but like the yokais and whatever.
Yeah.
There's a lot of those that are quite similar, or like I was on my way to doing all of that stuff, did all of those side missions, which were all great.
Right.
Like, there's some good writing in that game.
Yeah.
Yep.
I liked the main story.
Yep.
Yes.
It had the Breath of the Wild thing of, like, map covered in fog and, like, finding your little Tory gates to open it up.
I really, like, the combat stuff was not the best of any game with combat in it this year.
Yeah, I agree, yeah.
And, you know, a lot of the same enemies you're fighting again and again. But the way that it was done, for whatever reason, I didn't stop enjoying it.
Yeah.
I think the use of the triggers on the PS5 was done really well.
Yep.
The way that it felt so chunky to pull out your, you know, Ghostwire shit.
Yeah.
And be casting those spells at people, it just felt nice to do, even though it wasn't like the most complex thing in the world. I enjoyed it the whole time.
I was very pleasantly surprised at how genuinely emotional the story was. Like, at first I was like, God, this could not be more tropey, more done to death. And then it turned out to just be really well executed.
And look at it with, like, Forspoken, we just played the demo of, you've got kind of sarcastic guy who lives with you for the whole thing and has the powers in him, and you're the quippy youngster and whatever, and it fucking works in this.
Yeah.
Because it is written with heart and it's got backstory that you learn about these characters that is really enjoyable. I really enjoy Ghostwire Tokyo, and if it's flown under the radar a bit, which it seems like it might have for a bunch of people, maybe give it a crack. Because also the first person sort of platforming jumping stuff in it worked really well.
Yeah.
Floating around that city felt fucking sick.
Yes.
I mean, I really hope
when I go to Tokyo one day and I can't fly around, I'm gonna be so disappointed by that.
Maybe you will. Maybe you'll be able to.
Maybe.
I really hope they're thinking about a sequel, because I think they've got such a great foundation here. Like, if they tweaked a couple of those little kind of things, I think they could really have maybe our shared number one year.
Whoa!
The highest praise possible.
Yes.
So that was all of our number nine.
That's right. So we back to Tommy.
That's awesome.
Wow.
For we're back to me. All right, well, guys, get ready to do it again. My number eight game of the year, Pokemon Arceus.
You can talk about Legends. That happily.
Yeah, that shan't be coming up any further.
Pokemon Legends Arceus was the best of the two Pokemon games that got released
for
this
sure.
year.
Yeah.
It was one of my honorables because I really did enjoy it.
Me too.
It just didn't quite make the list.
I feel like I've talked about it a lot recently in relation to Scarlet and Violet, and that's what made them sort of disappointing to me, is like, I don't know what they're doing in there. I wish they had of like merged these games together, or given Scarlet and Violet a bit, you know, not be co-developing them and give it a bit more time to take on some of the stuff from this. But yeah, this is the direction that I like my 12-year-old self, you know, looking into the future, wants Pokemon to be. I really missed the absence of the little collectathon. Like, the story's whatever. It's repetitive. The environments don't look great, but it just felt like such a almost like mobile gamey, like quick challenge. Just walk around these environments and tick off your list. And it's the first like Pokemon thing in, like, I didn't really take to Sword and Shield. I played a little bit of the Let's Go Pikachu one to get the little nostalgia hit, but this is the first one in, like, and the couple of generations before that I never played. This was the first one in, like, probably a decade or so that's, like, really pulled me back in and just, really reminded me of just how charming that franchise is, and feeling like you're existing in this real world where these little monsters live and inhabit, and that feeling, in spite of the technical limitations, like, it did feel believable. And this idea that they're not just treated as, you get one and then it's in your party and they've all just got the same attacks more or less, or you're putting it in a box and never thinking about it again. You're researching them, like, they have personality and they have different things that they do that you have to, like, look out for. I just loved it. It really scratched that itch of what I would have imagined these games seeming like or turning into, but it's also probably what they should have turned into around the GameCube era. You know what I mean? It's like it shouldn't have taken this long. Like this is the one that should have come out, you know, as hardware got a little, you know, if they had have done like a 64 version of it where they took, you know, the handheld games onto a home console.
Yeah.
They could have done something like this then and it would have been great.
The way console Pokemon games have been treated has seemed insane to me since Pokemon Stadium came out.
Right? Yeah, like, no, absolutely.
It is very weird. But I felt the same way about Arceus. Like all of the things that were added to it versus the old Pokemon games were the things that were missing from Scarlet and Violet other than the open world. But the open world-ish stuff in this, like it's smaller segmented areas, but they're still pretty open, especially compared to, you know, previous Pokemon games.
Yeah.
It was implemented better in this where I liked getting the different mounts that did different things.
Yeah.
I liked the Pokedex stuff of collecting more than one of the same like type of Pokemon was a clever way to do that. Getting all of the little quests that you get from the people in the town that had so much more character to it than anywhere you visit in Scarlet and Violet felt was engaging and like cute and clever and enjoyable.
And just the presentation of it too. Like I went back to it after playing Scarlet and Violet for the week. I think I talked about this. And it just all of it, like the UI, the menu design, like all the little... Just the way like you going into battle is triggered and looked and the menu, like the font choices and the little like when you catch one, the little fireworks that go up from the ball, just all of that stuff from a design perspective is like it feels like this came along like 3 or 4 years after Scarlet and Violet.
Oh, yeah,
you know, in terms of like an artistic direction sense, like, yeah, you're right, that little town and like it's a cool idea going back to like, yeah, we're making these little Pokeballs out of wood. We've only just started catching these things. Yeah. Like all of that stuff is super cool. I just loved it. I hope that I don't know what they do from here in terms of the mainline series because this, I could just happily go along with more of this. And you're right, like the way the open world being segmented up, it's not a true open world. But then they did a true open world and they technically can't get it to work properly. So I'd rather have it like gated and have to be like, you have to go back to camp in order to travel over to this bit. You can't just go direct there. I don't care. I'd rather do that.
It made no real practical difference because there was enough exploration in those smaller zones.
Yeah.
Right.
But it still felt the same as Scarlet and Violet, just rather than moving like this 1-inch separation between those two borders is the only thing that changed in Scarlet and Violet. But like the way that those areas are laid out in Scarlet and Violet is still there is a line and then it turns into a different biome pretty much. So it doesn't actually make a practical
and
difference.
And people are clipping through that line and you know, the ground's disappearing. So it's like, all right, well, what at what cost? Like, I mean, this, a sequel
it had so
to
much
this,
heart to it, Legends Arceus, too. Like, the story was trying and the writing was fun and it was, like, really giving it heart is the right word. It felt like it had this personality to it that, it was missing.
It wasn't just the templated boilerplate mainline Pokemon game story, which has been essentially the same for 20 years.
And patches of that show up in Scarlet and Violet, but Legends had it the whole... Legends Arceus... I don't know what the fuck to call it. Which is the one word you take
Arceus.
Out of it. Arceus.
That's
had...
the unique word, right?
All of that...
And more.
throughout the whole thing. It was...
Well, the fact that it's called Pokemon Legends Arceus, Arceus being the name of like the mythical Pokemon in it, does suggest to me that this is now its own, like... side thing.
I kind of hope not, because
do as well
if they fold all of the stuff from Arceus in, and the you moving around during the battle thing, I can take or leave. That didn't have a massive, and like dodging and rolling and all of that stuff isn't necessarily the key thing of why the battles in that felt good. Like, but being able to throw your ball in the world and
being able to catch without being in a fight. It's crazy to me that that's not back in Scarlet and Violet. Mm. It's insane for having like an open world, the purpose of which is to make it feel more immersive and more true to life. It's like, yeah, you would be able to just hide in the grass and catch a like level one Magikarp without having to engage it in battle and get its health down. Like it, it's insane.
It's definitely the Pokemon game of the year.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's the PGOTY.
Yeah. I know GOTY is already the thing, so I don't know why it took me so long to go through
maybe
that
second guess
acronym.
But Bigotti.
Agreed. It's super fun, and if you've only got room for one Pokemon game in this year, Legends Arceus was far and away the better of the two.
Yeah, I think you should only have room for one Pokemon game this year.
Anyone with a fucking brain on them would know that it would be crazy to release two to the detriment of each.
Yeah.
But it is seemingly. Yeah, it's indicative of a lot of what I'm talking about with like the back end of this list and then this year in general. Had fun with it, does a lot right. You know, a lot of room for it. You know what I mean? The fact that it's still on my list, even though I think there's like quite a bit of room for improvement.
Mm, sure.
It's like, that's what this year is. What was there I was really loving. But it's like, yeah, any other year, the 10 would be full of games that are like, no, this is flawless.
Right.
But
fair
yeah.
enough.
Well, a flawless game, to a certain extent,
mm-hmm.
is my number 8. It's come up before. That's right, folks. It's Vampire Survivors.
Hey.
I mean, like, taste-wise, sure, you could want a different version of this game, but for what it is trying to be,
yeah.
it's pretty close to perfectly executed.
Man, you get in there, you spend fucking $3 or whatever it is, you get this great-ass game.
Yep.
It couldn't do much better than that.
Yeah.
Or maybe it's like $4.50, but it's like...
It's pretty damn cheap. I think I even, yeah, maybe got it on sale or something, yeah.
Wow.
I talked about this on the pod last week. I've only just started playing this on the mobile, so
it's it's on Game Pass.
It's on Game Pass too. Yeah. Right.
I feel like if I had have spent more time with this or gotten in earlier, it probably would be on my list. I'm still very early on with it, but yeah, right. Loving what's there.
So I dove in because I'd heard that it was really good, and I was like, well, is it going to figure on my Game of the Year list? And so started playing it maybe like 3 weeks ago,
mm-hmm. okay.
and just like play it every day now. Like it's so much fun. It's so well tuned. Upgrade mechanic is
yes.
so satisfying. It looks great for what it's trying to be.
Yep.
And the extent to which the game changes as you progress is maybe not evident early on.
Right.
But it keeps being... And it's not like it frog fractions, like changes into a different game, whatever type of thing.
Yeah.
It is... But it really does get to this point where you are fucking demolishing these levels. So then it... changes what the level is about, or
right.
like
yeah.
rather than it being about surviving for as long as you can, it's like, no, you'll always get to half an hour,
yeah,
but then something
right.
will happen at half an hour, and then this because and the levels are all like the different enemies are all fun,
yeah.
the different levels are
yeah.
all enjoyable,
the
it
little
looks
patterns
nice.
Of how the enemies will start to change, how
yeah.
they like approach you and the waves and the
figuring out
yeah.
what like optimizing the best sort of build you can have with
yes.
the different weapons and items you pick up. If you don't know what Vampire Survivors is, it is like a ton of enemies are coming at you,
it's,
and you can just
yeah.
move around in four directions, 2D.
2D bird's eye view, I guess, kind of is a way to look at it.
Yeah, yeah.
yeah.
It's a top-down looking...
pretty simplistic.
Yes.
Feels very... Feels
literally
like
no other controls than
yeah.
the keys.
Yes.
And you are...
Hey, you can use the mouse click button if you want.
Sure.
Like you're playing Diablo.
You can use a controller. I've been doing that sometimes. Feels
okay,
good.
Okay.
And as you are killing these enemies, you're getting experience and then randomly being presented with items that are either a top layer of weapons or a bottom layer of like effect-based
mm-hmm.
items.
Mm-hmm.
And you are just creating this fucking monster of a character that can destroy these really satisfying, enormous waves of enemies.
Yes.
Kind of like half clicker
yeah.
type of thing,
yeah.
half
yeah.
Diablo-ish type of wave-based.
To
yep.
speak to what you said about how it changes and kind of ramps up, I'd been playing it a bit and I was like, I think I've got a handle on this. And then someone in our Discord was like, I'd be interested to see how the mobile version handles a scenario like this, and posted a screenshot. And I was like, God damn, I guess I don't
right.
know jack shit about this game
right.
at all.
So
right.
it's got like 180 or something achievements that unlock new things
right.
as you go through. Some of them vague, some of them mysterious. Trying to figure out the more mysterious elements of the game
mm-hmm.
is really satisfying and fun as you go
mm-hmm.
on. A good pick for a number 8 or a number 10, I would say.
I totally agree, and I think I can happily say it's my roguelike of the year.
Oh, damn. You know what? Okay.
I mean, we did Pokemon Game of the Year. I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, I don't have another one on my list.
Yeah.
It's not on my list, but it's not mine.
Oh, okay. You dirty son of a bitch.
You
it's a
son of a kill.
just a fucking real simple but moorish game that I highly recommend everybody give a go because it is all over the shop.
Yeah.
And it's cheap as chips.
It's free on the mobile.
Free on mobile. Yeah. There's an expansion just come out for it too. The first little DLC thing with like a new map and some new enemies and new weapons and stuff like that.
Yeah. I think it's like wintertime or something in it.
I had a little bit of a go. It came out this morning as we're recording this. And it looks like it's maybe sort of a Japanese ghosts themed bunch of enemies too. Again, but I haven't had too much.
Japanese. That's cool.
Good game.
Well, it's time for your number eight.
Please the court.
So, okay. Well, my number eight we'll be talking about later, Tommy, because my number eight is Mario plus Rabbids Sparks of Hope.
We will indeed be talking about that later.
Okay. Ben looked at our lists, I reckon. Yeah. He's had a look over us and figured out exactly the way that we'll never get to say.
I just want to one-up you on every single choice.
Well, my number zero is Elden Ring, so we'll talk about it later.
It's my number one game of next year.
Okay, yeah, let's put a pin in that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because we'll certainly be talking about more Mario plus Rabbids Sparks of Hope.
100%. Maybe not for a week.
Hey.
Depending on where Tommy's put it.
Who knows what the fuck we're going to do?
Who knows what the future holds?
I'm going to talk about it now. Try and stop me.
You can talk about it now. He was sucking my penis.
Let me do that again. It's so small.
That's a great that really worked. That was great Foley work.
That was,
okay. Well, yeah, we will talk about that later. Okay, my number seven game of the year, Mario plus Rabbids Sparks of Hope.
We'll be talking about that later.
All right.
Yeah. Okay, next week.
Yeah, we'll be talking about it next week if that's okay.
Fair enough. Hey, wait with bated breath, everybody, because we'll have more to say about Mario plus Rabbids Sparks of Hope. For this week, I guess it's just fair to say we both like that game and it is an improvement on the first.
Good game.
Yeah. And we will expand on it further.
Yep.
Next week, seven. We're up to seven?
Yeah. Damn, already.
Fucking hell. Oh, yes. Okay. Well, I wonder where this game will come in on your guys' list. I wonder if you've done a Ben Vanel here and trumped me.
Oh, fuck. I hope so.
My number seven game of the year, The Case of the Golden Idol.
I have this as an honorable just because...
Really?
How
dare you?
Technically, you never played it.
Yeah, that's kind of how I feel about it. Like, maybe if I had have played it, like, myself, but I did kind of think... I did love it. I did think about putting it on there. But it just kind of felt like, oh, yeah, we did it as a video and, I don't know, for whatever reason in my
you
head.
You didn't
that
digest
was like
it in the
a
same
little,
way.
Yeah.
You can watch all of it, save for the small epilogue mission on our YouTube channel, if you like. Because, we played through The Case of the Golden Idol as a group.
Yes.
I was on the keys.
On the mouse,
on the ones and twos.
Which has led to the fact that it is in the list of games that I will talk about next week if we want to hang out for it. But also we've done that a fair bit, so I'm happy to talk about The Case of the Golden Idol now.
Well, we've done quite a long time.
Okay, go watch our YouTube videos, honestly, for
the
early bit, but it is such a good game,
and
it is all based upon figuring things out. So
best detective game of the year.
If you watch the playthrough, it does mean that you kind of can't play it yourself afterwards.
Yeah.
But it's a fucking good game.
Play yourself first. What? It's like five.
Yeah, I think it'd be probably about four-ish if you were doing it just yourself going through.
Yep. Mm. Give it a play, then watch our playthrough because it's a funny series of videos, in my opinion.
And it's a good game.
It's a good
game. I was going to jump in with this earlier, but I thought it might come up when you talked about the overall lack of quality of the writing this year. I think this is an outlier. Like, the writing in this is great.
Yes.
The little scenarios that you're solving and what's happening in them and how they kind of all lead into the next one.
Yeah.
The kind of overall thing of this was really cool.
I should point out midway or towards the end of this one, there will be spoilers for some games.
Yeah.
I'm not going to spoil this one right now, but even mentioning that a game has a twist can be a spoiler.
Right. Mm-hmm.
This has the twist of the year for me. It is the one thing that really fucking got me with a story.
Yeah.
In terms of a pullback thing, which is great to have in a little mystery thing.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
We'll talk about it next week.
We will. So you've got a week to play this game that we do highly recommend.
Oh, yeah. Good call.
Yeah.
Great summer break, holiday break game, I reckon.
Oh, yes.
So it's my number seven
it's
now?
Adam's sure number is. Seven.
Again, here's probably why we were thinking, how should we do it this year? Because my number seven is Splatoon 3. It's a good, fun game.
It's not on my list.
Okay.
It's on my list.
Oh.
Is it your number six?
I really wish it was. That would have ruled so hard. Yeah. But unfortunately, it's not.
Splatoon 3 is next week.
Splatoon 3 is next
week. We better be keeping track of, I guess we do have the list of games yeah. to talk about.
Yeah. Well, wasn't there one year where we were doing this and you were deleting yours after you'd read them? And then we got to the end and we were like, what was eight again? And you were like, no idea.
Yeah, that might have happened. Well, I've got them all in front of me still.
Okay.
Splatoon 3 is great. We'll talk about it later.
Well, yes. It's an honorable mention.
We're still
going to
talk about them all. We ain't fucking skipping any.
No.
So don't get fucking mad.
No. What are we doing? What are we up to?
We're up to six.
We're up to Tommy's number six.
We're this up to my number
everybody's
six.
Everybody's sixes. Yeah. And that's...
And this is our last ones for this week.
Yeah.
Well, okay. Here's one that I feel very confident will not be on either of your lists because of things that you've both said about it in the past.
Okay.
My number six game of the year, Stray.
Yeah, I mean, it's a good game.
I loved this game. I think that the things that people were maybe put off by about it in that it's less of a game than people were expecting. It's more of like a kind of like walking simulator.
Yeah.
I think is all, you know, that's fair enough. But for me, I didn't mind that about it. And I think that, I mean, I don't think that's a failure on its part because it's done that by design. It hasn't gone for something and not gotten there. I just got so sucked into the world and the design and the tone and the vibe of it. Like, those are things about a game that to me, like, they're the things that really hook me in that I can overlook a lot of other stuff with a game if it's not fully there. And, like, I just had such a great time with this. Like, this whole, the aesthetic of this game, it was what I kind of felt was lacking for me personally from Cyberpunk. Like, it had that kind of that Cyberpunk world feel. But it just had a bit of fun to it. Like, it was a bit less, I don't know, Cyberpunk didn't really grab me in that same way. And this delivered on that. And, like, I found the end very moving. Like, yeah, I just had a really great time with it. I liked that it wasn't super long. Like, I didn't mind that I wasn't doing, like, tough challenges or, you know, tough combat or anything like that. I just thought this was, like, a perfectly designed world that I just had a great time just vibing through. I loved it.
So I with my honorables, I just wrote a little thing next to them of the reason they're awards.
Yep.
And I gave Stray, which is in my honorables, the Vibey.
Yeah.
was the award that it got, because I agree, Vibe of the Year.
I mean, I don't know if it's Vibe of the Year, but I honestly liked everything about it except playing the game.
The seriousness of, I don't know if it's Vibe of the Year. We've got to reserve that.
Please, let's not be ridiculous here.
Your Honor, objection, I never said it was goated. Yeah, I don't know. It's something about it. Just it really, the soundtrack, the design of the little like leftover robot people and the writing in it.
I agree with all of that. Yeah.
The way that it did, it's like,
it's Vibe of the Year. You've convinced me.
It's vibing, Jerry.
The way that it did, it's like not quite all laid out on a plate kind of history of what had happened in this world was really nicely done.
That's the best thing about it being a cat protagonist, right? Is like the way you get around to that environmental storytelling has to be creative.
Yeah.
And it was.
Yeah. I just felt like the ending to me, like you get to that end room and you leave behind your little guy and then you're out. I just thought it was like,
yeah.
And the stuff he's saying to you at the end, I did find myself getting really moved by it. I was like, wow, this is a nice little compact journey.
And it doesn't do its like environmentalist message thing so ham-fistedly that it bothers you.
Right.
I thought the robots were really, agree, nicely designed. Their emoji faces?
Oh, yeah.
Emoticon faces. That was the other word that my brain was trying to do.
Oh, yeah. The millennial word.
Yeah, my fucking Nokia 7800, whatever.
Yes. The little beep boops that are like fax machine-y sort of stuff, sound design of their like Banjo-Kazooie-esque text coming up was cool.
Jumping on those cunts' little fucking backgammon game or whatever it was. Knocking all the bits of the board game off the table. Fuck, I loved doing that.
Yeah, all of that puzzle, that like environmental puzzle stuff was cool. Like it was often very creative and interestingly done,
All of that stuff totally worked in Stray.
I just thought it was going to be a platforming action game, and it wasn't. And so for me, I guess it was more expectations that weren't fulfilled rather than like thinking it was a bad game.
I didn't like doing the stuff that wasn't just seeing those bits and pieces. I think I would have liked this game more if it were more of a walking simulator, weirdly enough.
Yeah.
Because like it's sometimes just a little awkward to jump from place to place, like the X wouldn't show up.
When you don't have like a... Because it's not... You can't just jump at any time. It's like an action button, kind of context specific.
Yeah, because all that stuff was pretty nice. Like the character and personality in that game was 100% there. You're right.
Yeah, it's kind of sits in the same realm for me as Ghostwire, where it's like the actual a lot of the gameplay is like fine without being like incredibly, you know, impressive, but just the whole sinking into that world and being in that world was just like a nice space to be in.
Ghostwire, probably my runner-up for the vibey.
Oh, yeah, it's totally.
Like just dark and neon, I guess, is how you win the vibey.
Yep.
But Stray's a good game.
Stray's my number six.
Meow.
My number six.
Hiss, hiss.
My number six, I was just double-checking this. It's the second game developed by Roll7 to appear on my list.
Here we go.
The second sports game, extreme sports game. Ollie Ollie World.
Great game.
Fantastic game. Love this visual style. It's not quite the same as Rollerdrome. It is just more of a cartoony style.
Yeah. Same sort of palette though.
Yep.
A lot of the same colours. Crazy that they put out two great games.
Yeah.
Very different stylistic games.
Suppose I didn't realize or remember that they were the same developer.
Game Freak, eat your heart out. Yeah, this is how you do it, honestly. But yeah, like obviously I kept comparing Rollerdrome to Tony Hawk. This is side-scrolling Tony Hawk.
Yeah.
It's beautifully designed. The art direction in this is incredible.
Great music.
Fantastic music. The challenges, the characters, it's packed full of stuff. There is an online mode. You can do like little seasonal, like, you know, competitions, high school competitions and stuff like that that unlock a bunch of stuff. The customization is so cool. It's not just getting like a Element t-shirt or a World Industries shoe. You know, it's cool, weird.
I got Flame Boy's head.
I did have Flame Boy's head on a t-shirt when I was... not for Ollie Ollie World, but when I was like 15. But yeah, it sort of borders on that Adventure Time style without being Adventure Time style. Like it's a bit more bright and a bit more fun without being so like silly and bleep blurpy, you know, quirky. I just love it. It's so fun to play is the main thing. It is a really fun game mechanically speaking.
I love this too. I toyed with putting this on my list, but it just, I think for me it suffered from the fact that it came out on like the 6th of Jan or something and I just had too much distance from it and I didn't get the time to check back in with it and play it a bit more. And I looked at the 10 I had and I was like, I'm happy with the 10, but I did really love this. Yeah, this is a high honorable. This probably would come in at like 11, I guess for me. Right. Yeah, really, really worth checking out.
Yes.
2D Tony Hawk.
Yeah, I will say, I played it initially on PC and loved it, and was like, I might get this. I want to play it on a console. Bought it on the Switch. It is no good on the Switch.
Interesting.
It runs poorly. The loading takes forever. Like, there are these beautiful, like, high frame rate loading screens of, like, different, like, I guess, randomly generated characters, you know, with, like, different, you know, outfits and shit on, doing different tricks as the loading screens. And it's so nice and smooth on the PC. And just noticing how it'll just be, like, jagged and like you just won't even get to see it.
That's right.
It's such a noticeable dip in performance.
That's what I was playing it on,
right?
And I'm still enjoying it in spite of that, but I think I got it because I was about to go away and I was like, I want on the Switch. But as I started playing it more, I'm like, this really, I'm pretty sure it runs it. I think when you're in game the frame rate is fine, but it's still 30, and it's like it definitely is a game that really lends itself to having that silky smooth frame rate.
Yes, because this is a game I never got around to, bought on the Switch. Yeah, right. Never ended up actually getting to it. So good to know I fucked that decision up.
Yeah.
I haven't checked in on it in a while though. Maybe they've patched it and it's a little
it's been the year where the Switch has really lost struggled its
that's
place
a,
in
yeah. yeah. That's yeah. A, that's probably another big one from the overall.
Yeah.
That, yeah, yeah, we need yeah. a new Switch.
But. I wonder if, because Oli Oli World and Rollerdrome, I heard good things about them from you and from mm-hmm. other places. And the biggest reason I didn't get around to them is because I'm not that. And I know that the actual game, similar to Tony Hawk, has nothing to do with actually skating or whatever, really. You know, like yeah. It's a arcade-y style. It like doesn't matter if you like real life skating.
Yeah, yeah.
So. But I wonder if the fact that both of these seem to have gone a little under the radar is similar to that sort of thing where it's just that theme isn't super in vogue at the moment.
Right.
Maybe. I mean, Oli Oli World is a... Because there's a couple of other ones, aren't there? This is a follow-on
yes.
from...
There were one and two.
Yeah.
Right.
Oli Oli 1 and Oli Oli 2.
And then Oli right. Oli World, yes.
And this is yeah. a bit... Yeah, so I feel like Oli Oli World got a bit more traction than Rollerdrome.
I think so, but yeah.
Could, yeah,
but like for people who haven't tried them, they have as much in common with the real sports as like Mario Kart does with driving.
Yeah,
you know, it's yeah. that comparison.
It's combo based. It's like yeah.
We're doing sixes, right?
This is
number six out of 10.
No more.
Well, and do you want to do, depending on how many honorables you got? I got like one or two that you guys have mentioned that we could just sort of end the episode with if we wanted, but we could.
Yeah, if they've come up already, that makes sense to mm-hmm. me. Yeah.
Yeah. But number six for me, the sixth best game in my opinion,
yes.
of the year, and I'm sure we won't be talking about it next week. Horizon Forbidden West.
Mm. Yeah, let's. You're free.
I'm assuming
you're
this
free to
is
go.
When I'm editing this episode, it will be a lot of my track with yeah. waves on it.
Yeah, I was actually thinking about this morning. I sat down to play to kind of refresh myself on something that. Is higher up in my list that we'll right. talk about later on.
Mm-hmm.
But I did. I was like, oh yes, I've got this week. Like, what should I go back in on? I feel like if I got deeper into this, it might be on the list for me. I was enjoying it at the point that I got up to, but this is another one that kind of sits in the category for me of like, it just. I just wanted it to knock my socks off a bit more and it just didn't.
I think I remember talking about it at the time with a bit of like, it's one of those ones where after like 10 hours, it noticeably is
yeah.
better.
Right.
Like
right.
it expands in what you're doing and you get into some of the more interesting side stuff and whatever.
I feel like it even had quite a hand-holdy tutorial bit at the start.
It's got one of those sort of like almost... like a separate section that is your kind of intro area that has a bunch of stuff but isn't as interesting as the later things.
Right.
Like The Witcher 3 had white fields or whatever it was called.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, Death Stranding is one that takes ages right. until you're like... And that's a lot of that is like the length of the cutscenes and everything. Yes, but like, I remember starting that when it came out, not gelling with it, putting probably close to 10 hours into it and then... Yeah, coming back and just like, it does take so long, but then once you break through that, it's like, this is the best shit of all time. I'm having an absolute blast.
So when I was in that the main portion of the game...
The West.
Fuck, I ended up loving it.
Right.
It really improved on everything that didn't necessarily hit with me as hard about the first one, where like, the movement is smoother, not perfect, but better.
Right.
The combat is more readable and more interesting to me. I feel like you're getting more options mm-hmm. that are actually useful and you know when you're meant to sort of use them.
Right.
Your
the first one was very much like you got a heavy hit and a light hit melee wise and then you shoot the glowing parts.
You got your crossbow and some traps, but like the way that I guess the AI is coming at you or just like the more interesting sort of big robots you're fighting or something is it completely did it for me this time.
Okay.
And I felt like the writing was for the most part pretty good. The stories that you're going and seeing in this world, the side stuff especially was really layered and interesting and creative.
Mm.
And the way that you're exploring the world improves. I'm going to spoil a little bit of Horizon Forbidden West here.
Oh, no.
It's got to happen. Okay. It's our game of the year stuff.
Tune out now if you don't want it spoiled.
Stay here and grow
up. If you don't
want
to see the footy scores, close your ears.
Not the very ending or anything, but later on you get a flying mount. You end up having a pterodactyl thing that you fly around
now
on.
Now, that shouldn't even be a spoiler. That should be front and center in the marketing, because I definitely would have pushed through if I knew that was coming.
And you don't get that thing until right towards the end of the main story, and it's fucking cool as shit, and you're flying around this really good-looking technically world where I know some people don't like the art design of Horizon as much, but I kind of enjoy it.
I like it. I like the beefiness. I like the kind of flowing. Yeah, that was...
It's approaching Transformers complex, visually unreadable thing. But I also really enjoyed the main story of, like, again, some spoilers, these people from the other who had gone off planet at the time of the apocalypse coming back, and now they're thousands of years of evolution of technology more advanced. Carrie Ann Moss is one of them. And figuring out how to defeat these seemingly invincible people with these shields that cover their whole face, and like
Ned Kelly,
the way it brings the
seemingly invincible,
the most interesting parts of the story from the first one,
which was very good,
takes those and runs with it. You go to Ted Farrow's tomb, and it is what they do with Ted Farrow is interesting, I think, and the portrayal of these billionaire warmongering corporate fucks from back in the day being written in the modern world is done well enough, I thought. You get like this kind of Mass Effect style home base with all your mates hanging around who you go and rescue from the world, and they're all talking to each other. Mm-hmm. They interact. They have interesting things to say. They have good side missions. Again, Mass Effect 2 style, you go out and do like loyalty missions for them, basically. Mm. I really... completely locked step with this game.
Yeah, this is on my list to kind of put a bit more time into maybe over the break. Because I don't know if I mentioned this to you guys, my partner's going to Perth for like a week and a half over a new year.
Yep.
And let me tell you, fellas, it's going to be a hot boy summer around my place.
You and Cube. Just
that fan in the PS5 just... Oh.
I reckon you, because like you, I think you would really like this game the more it goes on.
I think I will eventually. I just remember being frustrated that it's like, I want to be in this open world, and so much of the early bits are like, here's a cavern where now you're doing this this like story beat mission in, and just really being annoyed that I wasn't, you know, let out in the world. And also, as we talked about at the time, and as happened with Horizon 1, it very much suffered from coming along within a week of
One of the best games of all time.
Heavy hitter.
It was going back to it in June and later or whatever that
and it just
pushed it up there.
It made me think, like, we started the episode talking about how there weren't that many tentpole games. It wasn't as big of a year. For a lot of people, it's like God of War 2, Horizon Forbidden West, Elden Ring, a Pokemon game.
Yeah.
You know, it's like it... For certain people's taste, which is like, I guess, the mainstream, it all did well.
And my tastes as well. Like,
It was a massive year. It was just as good as any other year.
There's just something about it where the Horizon 2 is great. In a different year, it might have been lower or whatever.
Right.
But in terms of stuff, like, I'm being very positive about my favorite games rather than focusing on the stuff I don't like as much about them.
Yeah, we did reviews for that. Like,
exactly.
This is a celebration.
The way that it sets up a third one, too, really liked. And the DLC coming forward, I'm looking forward to.
The VR game.
The VR game.
Yeah.
That's
the whole world.
The $1,000 VR game over here in some ways.
I think I'm
really nervous. Can I tell you what I've done?
I'm tempted.
Oh, God.
I've pre-ordered.
Bombshell for the end.
I've pre-ordered the VR2, knowing that it won't take it from my credit card until the week before. So
Daddy's got to get to work.
Exactly.
My girlfriend.
I got a high pressure start to the business year.
My girlfriend was like, "Hey, for Christmas this year, make it a bit easy rather than just like, you know, it's taking a stab in the dark about what each other want. Let's just go out for like a really nice like." Meal, like let's go somewhere fancy in the new year and make
together,
that our gift to each other.
Yeah.
And I was like, no, I want PSVR2.
I'm gonna eat noodles.
I'm gonna
gonna play the Ratatouille VR experience.
Get me a sack of rice and sack of rice.
Yeah.
Why he's not making anything more. But it is a really great follow up. that is very much a follow-up to the first one. So if you hated the first one,
right?
I feel like they're all in on this franchise, right? And it seems like this DLC looks cool. There's already two other things in the pipeline. Sounds like from what you're saying, there will be a third. And it seems like these are things that are just going to, this franchise is just something that's going to get incrementally kind of like better and better as it goes along. And as they like build the world out more and more.
And
like,
that's the thing, is it brings that scope and the interestingness of the stuff that's in world that I didn't necessarily find in the first one. It's made me want to go back to the first one to be like, did I miss a trick with that one? Or have they just improved it for this one? Because it really... exploring and everything just was so much more fun in this.
Interesting.
And really well done. I liked all of the characters. I like the story. Looks incredible. There's an argument that it's the best looking game ever made that I would listen to and then maybe debate with.
Yeah.
But so people are having the argument.
That's my right as a free sovereign citizen.
People are having the argument and then you're just kind of sitting there. Yeah. You've just pulled up a chair and you're just watching this argument happen.
Yeah.
Box of popcorn.
Yeah. I've got gravy all over my shirt.
Waiting for a
because I've covered
moment.
My popcorn in gravy. You see,
actually, the best looking game is
Pokemon Scarlet and Violet.
Yeah,
Forbidden West is great.
I have the only games that have come up already that are my honorables. Pokemon Legends Arceus, which I totally agree with everything that you guys said about it. It's just not. It's just not on my list.
Pokemon Game of the Year, though.
Pokemon Game of the Year. Mm-hmm. And Splatoon did not. It's not in my top 10, but I really enjoyed it. I was very, very pleasantly surprised at how much I got into it.
Yep.
And would still be playing it if I hadn't experienced the internet connection matchmaking issues that just happened like 3 days in a row and took me out of that habit.
Yeah, sure.
But really, just everything about it, well designed. Very much an incremental sequel, which I think we all agree. It's so similar to the previous games, but.
Yeah,
yeah. Good one.
Literally the only two things that I think are bad about it are those two things.
Right, yeah. Right.
Rollerdrome's on my honourable. Nice. I've kind of got three categories of honourable, just straight up
good
games. And then, not really honourable, not on the list because we played them for videos.
Right.
Golden Idol. And then the probably would have been on my list if I had have played more of them, Horizon Forbidden West.
Right.
Right.
I think that...
Survivors?
Sure.
don't treat it like it's arbitrary, Tommy.
Too soon to comment. Like,
Well, I guess that's it. That's the first game of the year half.
Yes.
We're doing it over 2 weeks. Next week to, close out the year.
I think next week might be a little longer. Obviously, we'll have probably more to say about it.
I got a lot more honorables too. Because, Pokemon and Stray were both on there. But I've got 8 more. I have basically a top 20 list.
I do have 10 honorable mentions. We'll talk about the listener top 10 as well.
You know what? I'm going to mention one honorable that will not come up next week.
Okay.
But it was very good. Call of Duty Modern Warfare 2 was a great game. The single player campaign was bad, but everything they did with the multiplayer for this one, I really got into this year. Warzone 2 is extremely fun.
Loved watching that. That session that you had, Knox. That was,
It's a great game.
It's a good
game. I'm not normally fucking panic meleeing. If you watch that video, I'm better at
he's
it.
He's doing
than
it right now. He's flailing at me.
Just because that won't come up next week and there's a ton of them, I thought. I gave it the Good Call of Duty Game Award.
Oh, okay.
And that happens once every 5 years.
All right. Well, let's wrap it up there for this week. Thank you for joining us for part one of our Games of the Year. We'll be back next week with the rest of the countdown.
Yes. We can't say see you next year.
No. We can next week. Because then the first episode of next year will be like 2023 stuff.
Yes.
So head to filthycasuals.com.au for the links to all the stuff that we have going on. We've got the Patreon, the YouTube videos, all that kind of stuff.
We had a big year for that stuff.
We did.
We pumped out a lot of videos, bunch of premium episodes that you can get if you are on the
$10.
$10 US tier on Patreon, or you can buy them on our Bandcamp, filthycasualspod.bandcamp.com.
Once again, we sort of said it at the start too, but thank you heaps. And we'll say it again next week.
We certainly will.
To everyone listening this year. It means the world to us. Everyone on the Patreon, thank you very much for supporting us.
Yes.
It's
if you're not on the Patreon, thank you for like reviewing the show and just tweeting about it or just chatting to us. It's always nice to...
watching a vid, sharing a vid.
It really means a lot.
The best.
Thanks, guys. You rule. All right, we'll see you next time. But as we say here at the end of every episode of Filthy Casuals,
we will talk about Elden Ring next week.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.